Good morning. I guess a lot of you don't have kids in school, so or maybe not in elementary school. Well, we're very honored today to have Japan's first national security advisor to the Prime Minister, Koike Yuriko, join us to talk to us about the foreign policy strategy of the Abe government and also give us some insights about the new plans to establish a National Security Council in the Prime Minister's office in Japan. Koike-san has a fascinating resume. I'm not going to go through all of it, but she graduated from Cairo University. Some of you may have seen a column that Jim Hoagland of the Washington Post wrote recently, marveling that Japan had sent a national security advisor to a major conference in the Gulf to deliver a perfect speech in Arabic and lamenting that there were no Americans present capable of doing the same. But Koike-san has had a very diverse career. She joined politics in 1992 after working as a television correspondent for Nippon Terebi and other shows. And as a politician, she's risen quickly. She served as the Minister for Environment. She served as the Minister of State for Okinawa and Northern Territories. And she was appointed by Prime Minister Abe to be the first National Security Advisor for Japan. And she's here for meetings with Dr. J.D. Crouch and other U.S. officials and has established, by all accounts, a very excellent relationship, not only with Steve Hadley and J.D. Crouch, but other national security counterparts, Mr. Narayanan in India, counterparts in Australia, the U.K., and elsewhere. So I think it's a very important development for Japan's foreign policy profile and a great opportunity for us to hear about the Abe administration's strategy. Koike-san will speak for about 20, 25 minutes, and then we'll have some time for Q&A. So please welcome Koike Yuriko.
Thank you, Mike, for introducing me. And I'm supposed to be welcomed by a cherry blossom of the Potomac River in February, but I was welcomed by snow. Now, I'm honored to speak at the Distinguished Center for Strategic and International Studies today. The main purpose of my visit to Washington, D.C. this week is to address the Globe Forum on Climate Change as former Minister of the Environment. And now I'd like to take this opportunity ahead of Vice President Cheney's visit to Japan next week to illustrate the national security and foreign policy of the Abe government as his national security advisor, the very first national security advisor, in particular its commitment to advance Japan-U.S. partnership. He has been 4 months since Prime Minister Abe took his first assertive diplomatic initiative immediately after his inauguration last September by resolutely carrying out his surprising visits to China and South Korea. That has dramatically improved bilateral relations between Japan and its Asian neighbors. Then, in response to a nuclear test proclaimed by North Korea in October, Japan successfully led the United Nations Security Council in close cooperation with the United States to adopt a resolution imposing sanctions on this reckless country in East Asia. Last December, Prime Minister Abe agreed with Prime Minister Shin of India to establish a strategic global partnership based on universal values and common interests and to initiate their mutual annual visits with a view to enhancing such partnership. Last month, Prime Minister Abe expressed his will to strengthen ties with NATO during his visit to Brussels. Indeed, he became Japan's first prime minister to take a speech at NATO. Among such assertive diplomatic initiatives taken by the first Japanese prime minister, born after World War II, Japan-U.S. alliance remains at the core. There is no doubt that Mr. Abe will succeed Mr. Koizumi, I heard his son is working here in CSIS. Anyway, Mr. Abe will succeed Mr. Koizumi in further strengthening this most important relationship in the world, which is based on common interests and universal values of freedom, democracy, human rights, rule of law, and market economy. Our cooperation on North Korea, Afghanistan, Iraq, non-proliferation, and counterterrorism has eloquently demonstrated our alliance, which is more solid than ever. The North Korean nuclear test has aggravated the already tense security situation in East Asia and has eventually brought a great momentum to reconfirm the significance of Japan-U.S. alliance. We must further strengthen our alliance not only for the sake of our bilateral relationship, but also for Asia and the entire world. On the bilateral front, the realignment of U.S. forces in Japan, USFJ, is one of the most pressing agenda both governments have to seriously tackle. We need to maintain U.S. deterrence in this region while reducing the burden of Okinawa. However difficult it may be, we must get this job done right based on our bilateral agreement. I believe this is our requirement. As former Minister of the Okinawan Affairs, I would like to act as a mediator between Okinawa and the Japanese government. In meeting this requirement, the government of Japan presented to the Diet a new bill related to the implementation of the U.S. Forces Realignment Initiatives, which includes measures to facilitate the transfer of U.S. Marines from Okinawa to Guam. We will make our best efforts to pass this bill in this Diet session. Now, let's turn to East Asia. Although the Cold War is over, there remain uncertainties in this region. Among others, North Korea continues to be our gravest concern. The Pyongyang regime has tried to acquire nuclear weapons in defiance of calls and pressure from the international community. The North Korean nuclear test last October has completely changed and worsened the security situation in East Asia, constituting a clear threat to the security of Japan as well as that of the international community. A nuclear North Korea with ballistic missile launching capabilities would gravely threaten our security, as its ballistic missiles with possible nuclear warheads could reach Japan in about 10 minutes. Now, Pyongyang is developing Tepodon 2, an intercontinental ballistic missile that could reach the American soil. Such developments in the Korean Peninsula have validated the importance of developing a ballistic missile defense, BMD, system. This includes modification of Aegis ships with BMD capabilities and acceleration of the schedule on the acquisition and development of Patriot Advanced Capability Missiles, PAC-3. BMD is a purely defensive measure to protect lives and property of Japanese citizens, not aimed at targeting any specific country or increasing military competition in East Asia. We hope BMD will help stabilize the situation in East Asia by enhancing the credibility of U.S.-Japan alliance and deterrence. There is also a non-proliferation concern through possible exports of nuclear devices, related material and technologies, as well as ballistic missiles. Japan and the United States have closely worked together and pressure on North Korea to give up its nuclear weapon programs. Not only did we successfully cooperate in adopting UN Security Council resolutions imposing sanctions on North Korea, but we took our own tougher actions against the Pyongyang regime. We greatly appreciate the full support the United States government has extended to us for resolving the abduction issue, which constitutes infringement of national sovereignty and human rights. We certainly welcome progress made in the latest six-party talks, including North Korea's commitments to shut down and seal the Yongbyon nuclear facility and to discuss with other parties a list of all its nuclear programs and the establishment of five working groups, one of which is concerning the normalization of relations between Japan and North Korea. But they are just one step forward. There is a long way to go. We must continuously make joint efforts to realize a nuclear-free Korean Peninsula and a peaceful and stable region with normalized relationship between Japan and North Korea, and between the United States and the North Korea. We are also gravely concerned about Iran's nuclear issue, as it would undermine the long-established non-proliferation regime. The North Korean and Iranian nuclear issues, which may be different in character and in stages of development, are in common to the effect that both challenge our non-proliferation regime. We have consistently urged Iran to respond to the concern of the international community by suspending all uranium enrichment-related and reprocessing activities, including research and development. We should continue to put pressure on Iran by implementing UN Security Resolution 1737. Now on China. China represents us both opportunities and challenges. The fast-growing Chinese economy provides us with enormous opportunities for trade and investment. Japan's bilateral trade with China has already exceeded that with the United States. China is the leading destination for Japan's investment. At the same time, we have been gravely concerned about lack of transparency in China's military expenditures, the rule of law, human rights records, and infringement of intellectual property rights. There is also serious concern about China's increasing energy demand and the resultant adverse effect on the environment and climate change, and aggressive behavior to acquire energy resources overseas, including in Africa, inconsistent with global standards. China's recent destruction of its satellite by an anti-satellite weapon poses another grave concern in terms of security and peaceful use of space. The United States and Japan should continue to work together to encourage China to become a responsible stakeholder, assuming a global responsibility and a constructive role in the world, acting in consistency with international rules. The dramatic improvement of our relationship with China since Prime Minister Abe's visit to Beijing has enabled us to engage in a mutually beneficial relationship based on common strategic interests. Following the Chinese Foreign Minister's visit to Japan this week, The Chinese premier is paying his first visit in 7 years to Japan in April. Through these visits, as well as other contacts and exchanges between foreign and other ministers and politicians, Japan can not only further improve its bilateral relationship with China, but also encourage China to work together on common challenges in the region and the entire world. Now, Iraq constitutes a challenge for the United States, Japan and the entire world. We have consistently supported U.S. military action against Iraq, and have extended humanitarian and reconstruction assistance. And I, as a specialist of the Middle East, I fully know how important it is to settle Iraq for the stability in the region and for the stability of the world as a whole. And there's absolutely no change in the policy of the other government toward Iraq. Although the political process in Iraq was completed with the inauguration of the new government last May, the security situation is not improving as expected. For true peace and prosperity to take root in Iraq, political stability, economic reconstruction, and security must go hand in hand. We have to remind ourselves of the moment Saddam's Iraq was overturned when people of Iraq welcomed the U.S. troops to Baghdad full of expectations for the better life. Now we support the U.S. policy toward Iraq, and we will continue to follow our policy in close cooperation with the United States to help Iraqi people rebuild their own country. There will be discussion in the Diet as to whether or not to extend the Japanese law authorizing the government to send the self-defense forces to Iraq as it expires in July. We will make a decision whether to continue our airlift operations in Iraq, taking into account the political situations, security situations, and operations by the United Nations and other partners of the coalition. Other issues, including Afghanistan, the Middle East peace process, non-proliferation, counterterrorism, UN reform, including that of the Security Council, relationship with Russia, and partnership with countries sharing fundamental values such as India, Australia, and Europe, are also high on the agenda of Prime Minister Abe's foreign policy. Prime Minister Abe is also taking new initiatives to strengthen the capacity of formulating and implementing national security and foreign policy. These include a study on the right of collective self-defense, the establishment of the Defense Ministry, and the creation of a National Security Council, which I'm fully involved. The Japanese Constitution has been interpreted to prohibit the government from exercising the right of collective self-defense, as you know. This constitutional constraint has restricted the Japan-U.S. alliance and Japan's international peace cooperation. Prime Minister Abe is convinced of the need to study, based on individual and specific cases, to identify which constitutes an exercise of the right of collective self-defense that is prohibited under the Constitution. Through this exercise, we will work to reconstruct the legal basis for national security. Another national security initiative of the Abe government is the promotion of the Japanese Defense Agency to the Ministry of Defense, which was finally realized last month. As the role of Japan's self-defense forces expands from merely Japan's own defense to international peace cooperation, including the fight against terrorism in Iraq and disaster relief, such promotion is viewed as a matter of course in terms of strengthening our national security policy-making capability. I would like to stress, however, that the promotion does not in any way change the basic mandate and authority of the organization and is not aimed at changing our fundamental defense policy. Now, our most recent initiative is the creation of a National Security Council, which will be realized soon. Prime Minister Abe is determined to formulate an integrated national security and foreign policy with a long-term vision under the leadership of the Kante, or the Prime Minister's office. As his national security advisor, I am responsible for drawing a blueprint of a Japanese National Security Council, I call it as JNSC, which advises the Prime Minister on a long-term national security strategy, an integrated national security and foreign policy, and a prompt and effective response to emergencies in national security. The JNSC, when established, will be composed of four ministers responsible for national security and foreign policy: the Prime Minister, the Chief Cabinet Secretary, the Foreign Minister, and the Defense Minister. Other ministers may be invited depending on the issue to be discussed. Its secretariat will be headed by a high-level civilian officer and staffed by a small size of the best and brightest, including political appointees, career officials, military officers, and private experts. The National Security Advisor will be always present at JNSC meetings and give advice to the Prime Minister for national security affairs. We are hoping that through this new and strengthened national security apparatus, we will be able to formulate a better integrated and coherent national security and foreign policy and work more closely with the United States and other partners. And maybe you can get this article written by Professor Kitaoka of Tokyo University. He was one of the leading figures to draw the blueprint of JNSC. So this will help you to have more understanding about the future JNSC. Now, as a conclusion, as I have just outlined, Prime Minister Abe is determined to strengthen alliance with the United States through bilateral, regional, and international cooperation. Moreover, Mr. Abe, proud of Japan's history of peace for the past 60 years and with strong belief in fundamental values of freedom, democracy, human rights, and rule of law, is committed to play a more active and constructive role in the international community by enhancing the capacity to conduct national security and foreign policy and through his assertive diplomacy. I hope that Vice President Cheney's visit to Japan next week will be a precious opportunity to reconfirm and strengthen our already solid alliance and to advance our global partnership. Thank you very much.
That was outstanding, Koike-san. Thank you. It was comprehensive, strategic, but very precise on some sensitive issues, including collective self-defense. The audience today includes some very distinguished diplomats, former diplomats, scholars, Georgetown students, distinguished interns from CSIS, a few dangerous journalists. I think what we'll do is Yuki Tatsumi is going to translate for the Q&A session. I'll call on people, and I'll try to get people from each of the previous groupings. And we have about 30 minutes, but I'd like to ask the first question, which is about Article 9. For Prime Minister Abe, revising Article 9 has been one of the key themes. Do you see movement on Article 9, not just collective self-defense, but Article 9 itself during the Abe government?
それでは一番最初に質問させていただきます。質問の内容は憲法9条に関することなんですけれども、安倍総理の政権、安倍政権が発足した際の最大の課題の一つというものが憲法第9条の見直しであったように思います。ですので、先ほどお話の中で集団的自衛権の見直しということについては言及ございましたけれども、憲法9条の見直しの問題について安倍政権の期間中に何らかの前進があるかどうかということについてお聞かせいただければと思います。
Our answer to answer questions, my favorite questions in English, and if not in Japanese, then I will answer in Japanese. 憲法9条の問題もそうでありますけれども、憲法の改正ということについては9条のみならず環境の問題など広くあります。そして現在国民保護法、ごめんなさい、国民の投票について、国民投票についての議論が具体的に今上がっているわけで、この国民投票法についての早期の実現ということを今期は考えているということであります。それを経ないと、その次の憲法の改正のところにまで来ない。ですから、そのまだ入り口であるということだと思います。
Thank you for that question. Regarding the Article 9, in terms of that, actually when we talk about constitutional revision, we're not really only talking about Article 9. There are other issues such as environmental issues. And right now at the Diet, we have been discussing the national referendum bill. And without this bill, we would not be able to even start the revision, constitutional revision process. So if you can understand that where we are is at the very entrance at this process, and we would like to focus on enacting this national referendum law as soon as possible, and perhaps during this Diet session.
Bill Clark, I think we met years ago, and I know your family contributed to the comfort of Japanese in Cairo, but I have a question, since it is your area of expertise. Currently, the Shia-Sunni split is giving us a great deal of trouble, and looks like it will continue in terms of Iraq, Iran, Syria. How do you see this? How does Tokyo look at this, and how do you shape your policy to take this into account?
それでは総補佐官のご専門の領域についてお伺いしたいと思いますが、現在中東ではシーア派とスニ派の対立というものが非常に大きな問題になっておりまして、これがイラク、イラン、あるいはシリアといった国を考えるときに今後とも大きな課題となってくるのではないかと思うんですけれども、こういう問題について東京の方でこういう状況というものをどういうふうにご覧になり、またどのように政策を形成していかれようとするのか、お願いいたします。
現実にイラクにおきましては、地域によって、クルド、そして地域によってはシーア、つまり北部南部はそれがクルド系、そして、シーア派の方々で、住民がかなり固定化しているということが安定につながっていると思います。逆に言えばそれぞれが混ざっているところ、特にアンバル県であるとか、それからバグダッドでは、そのバグダッドのサドルシティに見られるように、やはり宗派的な対立が激しいということに対して大きな懸念を持っているところであります。 またそのこちらでも報道されているようにシーア派の関連でイランの関与なども言われているところでありますけれども、しかしながら私は考えるに それぞれイラクの国民一人一人はより早くより快適なその安心した生活を求めている。そのためにはそのテロリストとの戦いもそうでありますけれども、一方で民生、例えば電力がですね、あの暑い国で、その毎日数時間停電するというようなことは人々の不安を募らせるわけでありまして、そこにまたテロリズムがつけ込んでいくということもあります。ですからもうできるだけ早くその安心した地域をだんだんと確実に広げていくということをしていかなければならない。我が国もずっとその人道的な立場からの支援をしてまいりました。そういったことからもイラクの国民、一般の国民をシーア派であれ、スニ派であれ、彼らの安心安全を確保することがテロリストの活動を妨げると言いましょうか、テロリストたちの活動をしにくくなるという地域の情勢を作る必要があると見ております。
Thank you for that question. Regarding the Iraqi situation, as you pointed out, there has been sectarian violence and has been quite a problem. But as I see it, in Iraq, in the areas where residents are rather stable, for example, there are large percentage of Kurdish residents in the northern part, and the southern part is more Shiite. So those two areas seem to be a little bit more stable. But the cities such as Anbar or Baghdad, where different people from different sects are co-presiding, such as, and Sadr City probably is one of the good examples for that, tends to be less stable, and the sectarian violence seems to be more intense. And Japan is, of course, gravely concerned about that situation. And also, as it has been reported in this country of late, when it comes to Shiite activities, there has been some reporting regarding the possible Iranian involvement in the Iraq. But the way I see it is that if you look at the Iraqi people, ordinary Iraqi people, what they want is to rebuild their country and gain a better life, and the sooner is the better for them. So in that case, if you think of that as a goal, of course, combating terrorism is important, but at the same time, stabilization of the civil lives is just as important. For example, in Iraq, the power supply tends to still be intermittent in a very hot region like that, and that will bring the sense of discomfort and the sense of insecurity to people's life, and that could create a further opening for terrorists to manipulate. So I believe that it is critical that we expand the area where people can live comfortably, safely, in security, and that would in the end prevent the room for terrorists to manipulate to further emerge. And Japan has been providing the assistance to Iraqi people from the humanitarian perspectives of it. So I do believe that it is essential to help Iraqi people gain the life that is safe and stable.
Eric McVeigh, the Institute for Foreign Policy Analysis. Ms. Goyke, you mentioned the improved relations between Japan and China. In recent conversations, I've heard less complaints from the Chinese about things like history and Yasukuni and textbooks and so forth, and more concern about the effect of the U.S.-Japan alliance on the Japanese Self-Defense Force, ballistic missile defense, senkakus, and chunxiao. I can't remember the Japanese word for that natural gas field. Are there any progress in any of these areas?
日中関係についてお伺いします。最近中国の専門家と会話をしておりますと、日本の歴史問題あるいは靖国教科書問題といったことについてはあまり不平が聞かれなくなってきてはいるんですけれども、その代わりその徐々にその日米同盟が中国に与える影響であるとか、自衛隊の能力の問題、あるいは弾道ミサイル防衛における日米協力、それですとか、あと尖閣諸島、そして東シナ海のガス油田の問題ということについて懸念を表明する中国人の専門家に多く出会うことがあるんですけれども、このような問題について何か進展が見えるというようなことはありますでしょうか。
どの国との関係であれ、さまざまな問題が提起され、そして話し合いが行われ、理解が重ねられ、そしてまた新たな問題、そしてまた古くの問題、これはずっとつながるものだと思います。それはむしろ関係の近さなどを表すものであって、そしてこれら の課題について、日中間で、また対話が可能となるような状況ができているということは嬉しい、喜びたいと思っております。さまざまな問題ありますけれども、しかしながらそこが互いに対話していくことによって解決するもの、なかなか解決しないもの、さまざまございますけれども、まずは対話ができるという今の状況をまず安倍総理が作ったこういった信頼の醸成の糸口ができているということが必要だと思っております。
Of course, as you pointed out, there are various issues that are presented between Japan and China, and there has been discussions, and that there will be more mutual understanding. But then there always will be new problems, and in a mixture of old problems. So this is all part of the cycle of the bilateral relationship. And in a sense, the fact that we have so much to talk about also shows the closeness of the relationship in some way. And it is I'm quite happy that Japan and China has the capacity to have a dialogue on these issues. And of course, as you pointed out, there are various issues that remains between our two countries. Some we may be able to seek a sooner resolution, others not so soon. But I think the critical point is that Prime Minister Abe created the environment that bilateral dialogue can happen, and has opened the door for the confidence building between our two countries.
I had Chris next, but you're going to have to come into view.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. I guess I'm the dangerous journalist, but mainly to myself. God, computers. Koike-san, thank you so much. Good op-ed in the Post this morning. But
I can see you.
building on Admiral McVaden's question, have you seen in the process of the six-party talks a greater appreciation on both sides, bilaterally, China and Japan, of each other's point of view? And do you think the current outcome of the six-party talks is going to help further that or create new issues as we get into these working groups? And then I had a specific inside baseball question, and I apologize. It sounds like the initial down payment of energy, whether it's oil or what, will require some payments by the five. And I'm wondering, as you see it now, given the current political situation in Japan, particularly with abductees, is it going to be difficult for Japan to immediately participate in any compensation program with North Korea? Thank you.
前の質問に、つながるような形で6者協議に関してご質問させていただきたいと思います。6者協議のプロセスを通じてこの問題に対する日中お互いの見方に対する相互理解というものが深まったとお考えでしょうか。そしてまたこのことが今後これから作業部会などに分かれて6者協議作業していくわけですけれども、そのことに対して最終的にいい結果をもたらすかということをお考えかどうか伺いたい。それが第一点。そしてさらにちょっと詳しい質問になってしまうんですけれども、報道を見ておりますと6者協議の結果できました作業部会、それからプロセスの流れなどを見ておりますと、エネルギー、まあ、これが重油の供給であったり電力の供給であったりということで、何らかの形で北朝鮮や5カ国が報酬を与えるという言い方はあれですけれども、参加しなければいけない。ただ拉致問題をめぐる日本の政治状況を鑑みますと、そのような北朝鮮に まあ、保守を与えるよう、保守を与えるようなそのエネルギーに代表されるような活動に日本が直ちに参加し始めることが可能かどうかということについてお考えを伺えればと思います。
6者協議について の詳細な報告はまだ受けておりませんけれども、まあ、各種報道なども含めて、お答えするならば、今回のは、まあ、先ほど私申し上げたように、まず第一歩、ファーストステップフォワードであるということだと思います。そしてその中で、まあ、5万トンの経済エネルギー資源と緊急エネルギー資源を開始するわけですが、これについてはですね、拉致問題を含みます日朝関係の現状を踏まえまして、まあ、我が国は参加はしないということであります。一方でその作業部会が設置されるわけでありますけれども、その中の一つで日朝国交正常化ということについて日朝関係での話し合いも進めていく、これについてはですね、他の作業部会とのペースについてきっちりと合わせていくということで、日米間でそこはその進み方にあまり違いが出ないということを注意をしてやっていきましょうということを確認していきたいと思っておりますし、またアメリカもそのことについて重々理解をしていただいていると、このように思っております。
Regarding the six-party talks, as I mentioned in my opening remarks, I think current outcome is really the first step forward, and we still have a long way to go. And in regards to your question of energy assistance, of course, there is emergency energy assistance that amounts to about 50,000 ton, but on this one, Japan is not in the position to participate at this point, given the lack of progress and the abduction issues between Japan and North Korea. On the other hand, though, one of the working group is on the normalization between Japan and North Korea relations, and there are other four working groups, of course. And as we proceed in the normalization discussion with North Korea, we need to ensure that the pace of the discussion in this particular working group will not be out of step with the other four working groups. And I believe it is critical that U.S., United States, and Japan closely coordinate with each other, so to ensure that. And beyond that, I have not seen the details of the substance of the six-party talks. So I probably should not get into that at this point.
Thank you, Koike-san, for a very clear explanation. Nice to see you again. My question involves the National Security Council. First of all, congratulations on putting the plan forward. It looks like a very good plan. But I've noticed in the Japanese press the last few days quite a bit of skepticism about whether this structure is really going to be effective, given the long history of lack of cooperation between various ministries in Japan, lack of information sharing. Do you think what needs to be done to really make this work rather than just be a very weak structure?
ありがとうございます。またお目にかかれて光栄です。NSC についてご質問させていただきたいと思います。まず今出ている計画というものは非常にいい計画だと思います。喜び申し上げたいと思いますが、他方過去 2,3 日ぐらいの日本の報道ぶりなどを見ておりますと、実際にこの NSC というものがきちんと効果的に機能するのかといったことについて非常にその懐疑的な見方を取る報道が多いように見受けられます。でこれはまあやはりこれまで日本の中で省庁間での連携がうまくできていない、あるいは情報共有がきちんとされてこなかったという背景があるからだというふうに思いますけれども、そういったことを踏まえまして、この NSC というものがきちんと実効的な形を持って機能するためにはどのような要素が重要になってくるとお考えでしょうか。
私もメディアの出身の人間の一人でありますけれども、メディアは日本の外交政策、安全保障の迅速な決定、これらのためにはより統合された防衛外交の機能が必要だということを常に訴えております。で、NSC を作ろうとするとそれは機能しないという、多分これがメディアの仕事なんだろうというふうに理解をいたしております。 20世紀と比べて、まあ、20世紀に私は経済、日本の戦後経済をですね、安定させるために経済安定本部安本というのを作った。でそこはまあ物価統制型でありましたけれども、機能とすればそれが日本を大きく動かす、組織となりました。今回の JNSC というのは経済ではないけれども、日本世界の冷戦の後の新しい日本を動かすそのエンジン、それは安全保障という大きなエンジンの役目を果たす、そういう位置づけ、歴史的な位置づけにしたいと思っています。アメリカの NSC も大統領と補佐官、そしてその時の時代背景によって、その役割が大きく変わってきたものと理解しております。アメリカのこれまで の NSC の例、そして各国の NSC の例などを参考にしながら、日本のに一番ふさわしい JNSC というのをいう組織を作っていきたい。そしてできるだけ多くの専門家の方々にもそこに、まあ、小人数の組織ではありますけれども、そこで、活躍してもらう人たち、スタッフとして活躍してもらう人たちをこれから募っていきたいと思いますので、ここにいらっしゃる方々でもどうぞ我こそはと思うことをおっしゃっていただければと思っております。
Thank you for that question. I also come from a media background, but Japanese, it seems to be the job of media that on one hand they always call for the need of the more integrated defense and foreign policy, the decision-making process for speedy decision-making. But when it actually comes to the specific proposal, such as NSC, they start criticizing that it cannot work. So I just think it's just part of their job. They have to do that. But when I look at... But I'd like to take you back to actually a little bit into the 20th century, when the Japan was trying to reconstruct its economy. There was a government office called the Economic Stability Headquarters. This office was meant to stabilize the prices. But this organization eventually contributed a great deal to trigger the economic reconstruction of Japan in the post-war years. And I would like to see this JNSC in the similar light. That is that by that I mean I would like to make this NSC into a engine for Japan to navigate into the post-Cold War era. And of course I understand that the American NSC has a president and various special assistants, and the role of NSC in this country has also changed and evolved over the years. So as I look at American example, I would also like to take a look at other countries' example and would like to come up with what is most appropriate and most fitting for Japanese structure. And in that process, I would like to open doors for as many policy experts as possible, although this will going to be a quite small office. But for those of you who are in the room and who thinks that you're qualified, we're accepting resumes, so mm-hmm. Send them in.
Georgetown students, this would be a good time to ask a question. I've been ignoring this half of the room. Yes.
Nadia Chow with the Liberty Times Taiwan. In the previous 2+2 meeting, there was, I would say, joint consensus by U.S. and Japan said that, you know, stability and peace in Taiwan Strait is a mutual concern. I don't know if that continued to be Abe government's policy. And the other thing is that recently, the Deputy Minister of Defense in Taiwan openly urged Japan to transfer technology and weapon to help Taiwan to build its defense capability. I don't know if there's any possibility for you to review this request. Thank you.
台湾情勢についてご質問させていただきたいと思います。2005年2月の日米安全保障協議会の共同声明の中で、台湾海峡の安定というものが日米双方の共通戦略目標の一つとして含まれておりますけれども、この問題、この 問題というのは引き続き安倍政権においてもその戦略目標の一つ重要な課題の一つという認識でいらっしゃるのかということがまず第一点。そして二つ目の質問ですけれども、先日台湾の国防副大臣が日本に対してはっきりと台湾の防衛能力、防衛力の強化のために技術の供与というものを前向きに検討してほしいというようなことについて言明をしておりますけれども、このような要請が入ってきた場合に日本としてどのような対応をすることが可能とお考えか。
まず2プラス2でありますけれども、早期にまた開催されるということを期待をいたしております。そしてまたその、私はずっと沖縄担当大臣でもありましたけれども、やはりその沖縄でにおける米軍の再編の問題もありますけれども、まずは抑止力を確保するという観点から沖縄の位置づけというのは大変重要である。一方で沖縄の方々の声もしっかりと聞いていかなければならない。その意味で先ほども私はメディエーターになっていきたいということを申し上げたわけであります。米軍、沖縄における米軍のその抑止力というのはやはり日中そして東アジア全体を今見た上での必要な抑止力ということでありますので、台湾海峡という今具体的な話出ましたけれども、地域全体を見て何が必要かということを話し合うということでありまして、今その点だけ取り出されてこちら今お答えする立場にはないのかなと思っております。
Regarding the 2 plus 2, first of all, I do hope that next 2 plus 2 will be held soon. But right now, our immediate challenge is to implement and execute the U.S. force realignment in Japan. We do need to maintain U.S. deterrence capability, and it is critically important that we do so. But I also, having served as a Minister of State for Okinawan Affairs, I also realized the necessity of lessening the burden of Okinawan people who has been hosting U.S. forces for such a long time. So that is why I mentioned in my earlier remarks that I am eager to serve as the mediator between the Central Japanese Government and the Okinawa. In the process of the effort to maintain the deterrence capability, this capability that we will have is not just only for the specific scenario such as Taiwan Strait issue as you mentioned, but it's rather for the entire stability of the entire East Asia region. And as we look at this broader region called East Asia, what is required and what needs to be strengthened and so on and so forth. So I'm not quite sure if I'm in the position to address the specific issues such as Taiwan Strait at this podium.
Thank you. Stuart Goldman from the Congressional Research Service. Koike-san, you referred very briefly in passing to the Abe government's interest in relations with Russia. But as a former Minister of State for Northern Territories Affairs, I suppose that you must have some more than small interest in Russian affairs. And the Putin administration presents an interesting challenge for your government now, both in its toughening posture on the Northern Territories question, as well as the difficult position that it presents regarding the pipeline from the East Siberian oil field to the where it will go to Taipei or to the Sea of Japan. Can you say, A, first, whether the Abe government treats these issues as high-priority issues, and if so, what positions you believe the government is going to take toward Russia on these two questions?
ロシアとの関係についてお伺いしたいと思います。北海道開発長官もなさっていたということで、この問題については特にご関心も強いのではないかと思いますけれども、現在のロシアのプーチン政権というものは日本にとって非常に大きなチャレンジなのではないかと思うわけです。というのは北方領土問題についても非常に態度を硬化させているということもありますし、またその一方でシベリア油田から日本海に抜けるパイプラインの問題というものもあります。ですから2つこれに関してご質問しますけれども、1つ目はこのような問題というものが安倍政権でも ある程度の高い優先順位を持って課題として捉えられるのかどうかということで、それに引き続くフォローアップの質問としましては、そうである場合日本政府がこのような問題についてどのような立場を取る、あるいは取るべきとお考えかということについてお伺いします。
今北海道開発庁長官とおっしゃったんですが、これは違って、それは今もう国土交通省の一部になっておりまして、私は北方領土ノーザンテリトリーの大臣をやっていました。そして2月7日ですね、先週は北方領土の日と定められておりまして、この日には東京でも根室、根本ですね、大きな国民集会が開かれ、そこには安倍総理が国会の合間を縫って、出席されました。そこで述べられたのはですね、北方領土の返還がいかに重要であるか、そしてまたお父さんの時代からこの北方領土の問題について、自分が、お力を入れてきて、そしてその現在総理である安倍総理自らがこの北方領土の問題についてしっかりと取り組んでいくということを表明されたのが1点です。それから北方領土問題、これは領土の問題であるわけで、ここでもともと我が国は北方四島の帰属の問題を明確にして、そしてその返還の方法と時期については柔軟にというのが変わらない姿勢としてやってきているおります。これは変わらない。一方でですね、おっしゃったご質問にあったサハリン2の話だと思うんですが、約8割できているところに環境問題、ロシアに環境問題を入れてどうかなと思ったんですが深い意味ありませんが、そこで、かなり今の流れからしてもロシアはエネルギー関係の会社を国営化していくという今大きな流れに変わってきて、こういった問題こそ外務省の地域ロシア関係の担当、それからエネルギー、それからある意味では環境、こういった各役所のですね、総合的な戦略を書いていかなければならない。NSC には将来これから準備をする NSC についてはこういった問題こそ国家的に取り組んでいかなければならないというふうに考えております。エネルギー、それから環境問題、それから地域の問題、これは他に例を挙げるまでもなく多々あるわけで、特に我が国というのはエネルギーに対してはとても脆弱である、それがゆえに省エネルギー技術は大変伸びている。これらのことを総合的に国家としてどう考えるのか、国家としてどのような戦略を書いていくのか、それこそが次なるNSC の仕事であるというふうに考えています。
Sorry, I just wanted to clarify my position as an interpreter made a mistake of calling me with the post that I haven't actually served. But in terms of the Northern Territory issues, on February 7th is designated as the Day of Northern Territories. And there are large meetings both in Tokyo, but as well as Nemuro, Hokkaido. And Prime Minister Abe, although he was quite busy in the Diet, he made efforts to attend these meetings. And what he spoke at those meetings was that the significance of this issue really lays in that this is the issue where his father's generation had worked very hard on. And now that his own generation is taking senior offices and including himself being a prime minister, this new generation needs to inherit the previous generation's baton, if you will, on this issue and keep pushing forward. But Northern Territory issues itself is the territorial issue, and the and the government of Japan has already always taken the position that it seeks to clarify the issue of sovereignty of the Northern Four Islands, but Japan can be flexible in terms of the timing and the way of the return of the sovereignty, and that this remains to be our official position. In terms of the energy pipeline issue that you mentioned, I believe you were speaking of the Sakhalin 2 project. When the project was almost 80% complete, Russian side came up with the environmental concern, and when I heard that, I kind of thought, Russia talking of environmental issues, that's pretty interesting. Not to imply anything, but I just, that was my reaction. But there's also a bigger trend in Russia that the Russian government is nationalizing the energy-related corporations, and that is a big trend in that in that country. And I actually look at the issues like this is the perfect example of a need for a body like National Security Council to come up with the national strategy as to how Japan should tackle this. Because obviously, because it has to do with Russia, MOFA, more specifically European Bureau, Russian Division, needs to be involved. But also, because it has so much stake in energy issues, the Resources and Energy Agency also needs to be involved in it too. So there is that interagency interest and overlap, and this is really the one of the issue that the comprehensive strategy needs to be formulated and executed. And as you look at other energy, environment, and other regional issues, particularly on energy, Japan is quite vulnerable, and energy security is always critical for Japan and the Japanese national agenda. But because we are so vulnerable in energy supply, we do have a high energy efficient technology. So when you look at this package as a whole, how Japan shapes its policy, I think this is a perfect example of an issue that JNSC can tackle.
People sometimes forget the history of the U.S. NSC, which was proposed by James Forrestal, not for the President of the United States to control the bureaucracy, but for the bureaucracy to control the President of the United States, because FDR had been making arbitrary decisions about strategy in World War II. And it was really only when you had strong national security advisors like McGeorge Bundy or Henry Kissinger that the NSC began to function in the way we think of it today. But the original act had no national security advisor. It's not in the legislation at all in the U.S. And in Japan's case, as you can see, Prime Minister Abe is starting with a vision, starting with a strong national security advisor, and the form of the National Security Council is following the function, is following this vision. And I think, to Rusty's question, I don't detect any great resistance in foreign ministry or defense ministry. I think the best and brightest see it as a real opportunity for Japan, and I think it's a real asset. To have this new institution, and clearly, as you can see today, to have Koike Yuriko putting it together. Koike-san, I know that one of the things I learned working with national security advisors is that time is a real rare commodity for you. So thank you very much. Please join me in thanking Koike-san.